Hello, everybody. You are listening to Corpse Run Radio. This is Ian Hazzikostas, and enjoy.
This is Corpse Run Radio.
We are the Forsaken. We are
the Forsaken.
More recruits for the Forsaken. The Dark Lady watches over you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 29 of Corpse Run Radio. My name is Grant Negus, and today, among other things, we have for you a Q&A session, some roleplay, and some pet battles. But let's dive right in to our first segment. It's the latest Q&A session that Noble did, I think, last week. Here is Noble 87 with his Q&A session about old gods, among other things.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new Q&A. Let's skip the intro and dive right into it, shall we? Now, I've seen the question pop up a couple of times about the old gods being truly dead or not. There were a couple of comments on Facebook, and this one on the last Q&A by Awkward Squirtle. No, the old gods are dead. We killed them. There are remnants of their influence, as there was with Yashiraj. The plot of the comic was Cthulhu being resurrected. You don't resurrect something that's alive. Yashiraj refers to its corpse haunting this land forever. The quest text for killing Cthulhu referred to it as dead. When questioned on why the world hadn't been destroyed by the deaths of Cthulhu and Yashiraj, their response was, "Didn't you play Kata? The world was destroyed because of the old gods." So I've been doing some research to figure out if we have any information on the old gods truly being dead or not. My assumption was that the things we faced in Ankh-Raj and Ulduar, the old god Cthulhu and Yaxxaran, that those were teeny tiny representations of the actual old gods. The real things, they still lie imprisoned beneath the world of Azeroth, and the reason behind that is partly because taking care of an old god, that is said to do immense damage to the planet, as well as Yaxxaran being described as being the size of Northrend. Now the information of truly taking care of an old god doing damage to the planet that was first revealed by the Tribunal of Ages.
Creators arrived to extirpate symbiotic infection. Assessment revealed that old god infestation had grown malignant. Excising parasites would result in loss of host.
If they killed the old gods, Azeroth would have been destroyed.
Correct. Creators neutralized parasitic threat and contained it within the host. Forge of Wills and other systems were instituted to create new earthen. Safeguards were implemented and protectors were appointed.
But then from the Chronicles, we learned that Loken has been messing around with the Tribunal, and we learned that the damage caused to the planets, that was first an assumption by the Titans, because the old gods had intertwined themselves with the planet, nestled deep within, and then it was confirmed when they ripped out Yashiraj and created this massive wound in the planet. This wound was then patched up with what we know as the Well of Eternity. The heart of Yashiraj, it fell back to the planet, and that was kept in the container, while the other old gods, Cthulhu, Yaxxaran, and Azoth, they were imprisoned beneath the worlds. Many, many years later, we have Garrosh who found the heart of Yashiraj. He gave it a bit of a power boost, only to completely drain it during the Siege of Orgrimmar, making Yashiraj the one and only old god to truly be taken care of. That is my assumption, because if we truly killed the old gods, then we would see a similar effect as what happened with Yashiraj being ripped out. A wound would have been left behind where the old gods used to be, and potentially even the life fluids of Azeroth's Titan spirits that would come gushing out. And yet, there are some arguments to be made for us truly killing the old gods. The questline, where you turn in the Eye of Cthulhu, and keep in mind that this is back in Classic, that says, "The walls of Ankh-Raj tremble. A force of evil, older than the world itself, has been destroyed. As you look at the remnants of the colossal abomination, your heart nearly freezes. Even in death, You can feel the legacy of C'Fun's evil around you. And then, Cho'Gall in the comics, he's working very hard at resurrecting his master, to which you asked, why try resurrect something which isn't dead? I'd say he was trying to revive that physical manifestation that we took out, hastening the breaking out of C'Fun, not to mention that in that same comic, we can clearly see C'Fun being active. He's giving orders and punishment to Cho'Gall. He's trying to whisper to Madan, how can something be dead while still being active? A similar thing with Yaxaron, as we see him active at the start of Legion. And then there's also BlizzCon 2010, where this question was asked.
Now, I was asking if you had any theory or idea of what a name for next old god would be, and maybe elaborate a little upon. Because, I mean, a while ago you kind of suggested the theory that if the old gods were dealt with, that kind of this doomsday and Azeroth kind of just ceased to be because of some catastrophic event, but so far with two down, we're not really seeing much calamity happening.
Have you played any Cataclysm?
You know, like where the world blows up? Because of the old gods?
And then they go on to spoil that N'Zoth is the third old god and the creator responsible for the spark in the Emerald Nightmare and all sorts of stuff going on. He was the one signing Deathwing's paycheck, so behind Deathwing's plans during the Cataclysm. But I do think that there was a bit of confusion going on while the question was asked. Matthew, the one asking, goes off the assumption that we took care of two of the old gods, we truly killed them. And as it was said, this was supposed to do a lot of damage to the world and he hasn't seen anything yet. Madsen then goes on to answer that the Cataclysm was because of the old gods, specifically N'Zoth, so they do mention multiple old gods and then N'Zoth specifically. That was not the question though. If we truly take care of the old gods, then we should have seen some ramification for that back during Classic and with Wrath of the Lich King, while the Cataclysm, that was more about Deathwing following the orders of the old gods, N'Zoth specifically, which in turn then caused the Cataclysm. So yeah, that question, I don't think they really understood what was asked, but the one thing that I do believe really supports the idea, that is a follow-up question. Then why does Zalat say that they're all dead apart from the Zoth?
It is ironic that the weakest of us may be the ultimate victor. C'Fun, Yogg-Saron, Yashiraj, and, well, only one would remain to consume the world that was always meant to be.
I first wanted to argue this by something in the direction of she means the victor as the one truly breaking out of its prison. But she does mention Yashiraj in the same line as C'Fun and Yaxaron, with N'Zoth being the only one left standing to consume the world, as it was always meant to be. I think this line is really solid when it comes to the idea of taking care of the old gods, but it doesn't go against other evidence like C'Fun being active in the comics, and Yaxaron being active in Ulduar. Not to mention that it would be so much cooler if we still had the actual old gods to fight against, and not just a teeny tiny manifestation. So yeah, hopefully we'll get some clarification in the future. This might actually be a really good question to ask at BlizzCon. Did we truly take care of the old gods? If yes, then why is there no damage to the planet, and why do they seem to be active? If not, then why does Zalatov claim N'Zoth the only one left standing to consume the world? Gotta make sure to send that one in. Sticking with Zalatov, the lunatic asks, Zalatov talks about the scouring. Noble, what do you think of that? Of course, it's not certain, but my first instinct would say scouring being the scourge running rampant, corrupting the land and doing scourge things. However, the order in which he says it, the Cataclysm followed by the Sundering, and the Sundering was way before the Cataclysm, that suggests that the scouring was even before the Sundering. From that, I'd say it's more likely that she's talking about the war between the Titans and the Black Empire, the days in which they took on Azeroth's corruption, they placed the enslaved elemental lords in the elemental planes, and they imprisoned the old gods beneath the worlds. To something like Zalatov, that could definitely be considered a scouring, and I really wonder if they're going to do more with the Blade in the future. There seems to be a lot of hints at her having a history with the old gods. Some even suggest that she's the retcon fifth old god, as in the past, there were five evil gods imprisoned beneath the world, which was then turned into four with the Chronicles. There's a lot of cool stuff that they could do with Zalatov, which is a nice bridge into the next question asked by Snowberry17. I have a question for the next expansion. What do you think they will happen to our artifact weapon? Will we give them back, get destroyed or reforged, or are we going to keep them? This one is probably the most asked during streams as well, and it's pretty hard to say. I first thought that just hanging them up in your order hall or returning them to the previous owners when possible, think for example Doomhammer back to Thrall, that could be a good resolution. Recent information, which I'm not going to spoil, that leaves room open for a certain ritual which could require the power of our artifacts to finish up the expansion. They could give us, like, an echo of the artifact, so that we do have a weapon for the remainder of the expansion. But I don't know how it would feel going through the final raid time and time again, still empowering your artifacts, while also knowing that it's actually already gone. Part of me kind of hopes that they're going to go with the old school route of things, just giving us new weapons that are better than our old artifacts, with no real explanation or reasoning at all. That might sound awful, but it is kind of what's been happening between each and every expansion. I remember picking up Roctelar, the massive ancient bow of glory and epicness. My character went on a journey far and wide. To capture them was his real test, only to have the bow replaced with a green weapon the moment that you stepped into new content. Very hard to say, but I'm kind of warming up to the idea of using their powers in the final showdown, and then we'll just have to pretend like they're used up until we get these new weapons. As a side note, by the way, if you are interested in obtaining the skins for your artifact, skins you can use for transmog in the next expansion, for example the skins from the Mage Tower, then do make sure to do so before Legion ends, since they will no longer be obtainable in the new expansion. That's just a little side note, just so you got a heads up. Now the next question comes from Sprix FM. Hey Noble, I was recently thinking about the comic Son of the Wolf, and at the beginning, Anduin has a couple of paladin tricks up his sleeve, which had to take time to master, especially since he's using them to interrogate a demon. Heck, he even looks a bit older than he did in the cinematic where he finds his father's sword. By the end, he's an old man, ready to embark on a final mission with Prophet Velen to take on the Shadows. Where in the timeline do you think the comics events take place? And if we're going to deal with the Void Lords in the game, then what does it mean for the end of the comic? Why would there be a huge time jump if the Void Lords are all that's left after we deal with the Legion and the Old Gods? An oversight in Blizzard's writing, what would be retconned, or maybe a hint of something to come? What are your thoughts on this? A couple of questions roll into one. Now timeline wise, I first thought that the comic took place right after the Broken Shore, right after he lost his father. But since we now have the cinematic in which he picks up Charlemagne and we see Charlemagne in the comic, I'd say that this plays out after we take Anduin to the Broken Shore.
The young king will become a great leader. I have foreseen it.
Visions don't win wars, Prophet. The boy has a good heart, but he's untested.
The light is strong with Anduin. He will grow into his crown. We must have faith.
We need more than that, and so does he. Anduin wasn't there on the Broken Shore. He hasn't seen the sacrifice his soldiers made, that they continue to make. A king must know the weight of the orders he gives, the price of them. If a compass breaks his spirit, how will he respond when the war arrives on our doorstep?
We found his father's locket as we made ready to assault the Tomb of Sargeras, so around that time period, I would say, is when the comic takes place. It's very cool to see Anduin use like a hammer of light, and I believe he also binds the demon with some sort of variation on Shackle Undead. We do need to keep in mind that our class abilities, they don't always fully reflect on characters within the story. Their abilities, they're described differently, they have more variation to play around with. Like, a small example, there's Malfurion, right, calling for a massive thunderstorm or lightning strikes. Druid just, you know, talking to nature, making sure that it's working for him. Even the recent development with Illyria has a shooting arrows of holy light, summoning a holy scythe if memory serves right. So abilities that we see play out in the story, it does not instantly mean a class change, but it could be a very cool potential storyline for someone like Anduin. He's always been described as being terrible with the blade, but perhaps his father's death, there will be a good motivation to actually get better at it. We could see a similar storyline like Arthas, darkness and choices and failure and pressure of leading along the way, only hopefully Anduin, he will not end up as a Lich King. Then to his future in the comic, that is indeed shown as an old man flying around with Velen and Adrenai, getting ready for that final battle against the Shadow, which of course hints at something like the Void Lords, but Shadow, it could mean several things. Either way, when it comes to Anduin, this isn't the first time that they dropped a prophecy about him. There's also a vision of the future as Velen. He once saw him in shining armor, leading the army of the light. There were also a ton of dragons backing him up, and the Horden Alliance, and the Naru that joined this battle, which could still become a reality. But if Legion is trying to teach us anything, it's that visions cannot be fully trusted, especially when you're listening to only one source. This, of course, gives Blizzard writers the opportunity to hint and suggest things for the future as much as they like, and when they have a change of heart, when they change plans for the direction of the storyline, they could just easily change it and write it off as don't believe every prophecy. All that said though, who knows when the end of the comic plays out. A time skip for us going back to Azeroth, that seems unlikely, since time in the Twisted Nether, it is indeed wibbly wobbly, but it does seem seem to go a lot faster than time on Azeroth goes, so if they want Anduin to be an old man in the comic by the next expansion, we would have to party in Argus for like 2,000 years or something, which might feel that way if there's a content drought between expansions, but story-wise, that doesn't seem to be the case. So yeah, I'd say the end of the comic is a possibility that they could work with, have Anduin and Velen lead the charge in the final battle somewhere in the future, or it could be just one of those ideas that they have and will never see it go down. When it comes to only having to deal with the Void Lords, keep in mind that there are expansions like Mists of Pandaria, where they suddenly came up with the Shah and whatnot. If Blizzard wants, it's a fantasy game, it's a fantasy story, they can come up with anything they like. Right, and then a final question, something a little bit more personal, a little bit more about me, from a name that I'll probably butcher. It's from Omaima Fatali. Noble, what is your favorite game after World of Warcraft? I always have the hardest time picking my favorites, since I'm down to pretty much playing anything as long as it's fun. It doesn't really matter what category it is, but RPGs are usually my thing. I've been a huge fan of the Legend of Zelda series, which I nearly played all of them. Like, I didn't play the CDI ones, but besides that, pretty much all of them. There's Kingdom Hearts. I recently took a mini holiday and I played through nearly all of them. I couldn't get into the card system one, but the other ones, they are so much fun. They went well up their own ass with the storyline though. It's new installments, just making it worse. But I still can't wait to play Kingdom Hearts 3. Can't wait to finally see it released. Fire Emblem, big fan of that series. I also play Hearthstone, Overwatch, some Heroes of the Storm from time to time with friends, and then just all kinds of games. There's like Far Cry, Mario Kart, Batman Arkham series, Bioshock, Antichamber, Fable, Terraria, Saints Row, all a lot of games, right? Too many to pick a favorite, but the one game that I did completely finish, which I can highly recommend to anyone if you haven't tried it out yet, that would be The Binding of Isaac. I love that game. It took my life for quite some time, and it's so freakishly good. You do need to enjoy the gameplay. It's like a random dungeon you get. You get like random abilities, and you get better the more you play, and you get further in, more upgrades, and it's really a lot of fun to do. Right then, ladies and gentlemen, with that, we're going to finish up this Q&A, and thank you so much once again for all these sexy questions. If you have more, feel free to leave them in the comments down below, and I might use them for the next video. Have an amazing week, everybody, and until next time, guys. See ya! Yeah.
The storm known as BlizzCon is almost upon us, and that means once again it's time for podcasters, community personalities, and fans to come together for one of the largest gatherings created by fans for fans. It's Con Before the Storm, featuring the 5th annual World of Podcast. It's shaping up to be our largest World of Podcast yet, with participants from over 50 podcasts and additional content being produced before and after the big party at the Anaheim Hilton on November 2nd. Even if you can't join us in Anaheim, we do invite you to check out the shows on Alpha Geek Radio or at twitch.tv/ConBeforeStorm. Can't listen to us live? We have you covered with podcast versions of our content available for download on demand via our World of Podcasts show feed on Google Music and Apple Podcasts. For complete information, show schedule, and much, much more, be sure to check out ConBeforeStorm.com, and also don't forget to follow us on Twitter at ConBeforeStorm and at World of Podcasts.
Everyone knows the Undercity has the best Hallows Eve parties.
That was Charm with her song Tomb of Sargeras, and Belle from Pwncast reminding us about the Con Before the Storm party and all the ways how you can watch and or participate in it. Next up is Doron's Movies with a roleplay guide of how to roleplay as Vorgan in World of Warcraft. Our favorite enemies, our arch enemies, however you... So if you're interested in role-playing as a Vorgan, that might give you some hints and some clues as to some direction as to how you should do it. Here, Doran's Movies.
It is decided then. We will unite all Gilneans and drive the Forsaken from our lands.
Hello guys, this is Doran's Movies, and in this guide I will be teaching you how to roleplay as a Vorgan in World of Warcraft. So in this video we will go over a few things, and most importantly their lore and traditions, culture and all that stuff. And I will also cover personalities, classes you can play, and also will help you kinda name your character, set up a basic backstory and all that stuff. So without further ado, let's just get into their lore. Now, I'm aware that a lot of people are actually confused about Vorgan lore, because I know I was around the time when Cataclysm came out, but once you get into their story and kinda understand it, it's actually pretty cool, unique and interesting. Now, I won't go like super crazy into their lore, I would just give you a really quick summary. Like, their lore is pretty long and pretty interesting in my opinion, but I can't like cover everything, so I'll try to give you just a quick summary. So if you want to learn about this stuff in detail, I would suggest that you read the story of Jen Greymane. I also made a video about him, even though it is kinda outdated, not really the best one. You can also read Wolfheart, it's a pretty interesting book, especially covers the Vorgan and their like initiation into the Alliance. And you have a bunch of other sources like Wowpedia and all that stuff. So, the Vorgans that you play today aren't really these beasts that you might think they are, because they're just regular humans who are a part of a nation called Gilneas that were infected by this curse. I'm guessing everyone knew that. Now, the curse actually originates thousands of years ago with the Night Elves. Now, the Night Elves practiced many forms of druidism before, because there weren't really any laws, you can practice whatever you wanted. Well, until like, not recently, but at least a few millennia. But there was this bunch called the Druids of the Pack, which worshipped a feral ancient called Gul'jin. I mean, you can learn more about him in Wolfheart, as I described previously. And he's pretty well like described in that book, so you can see how they kind of describe how he looks and all that stuff. So Malfurion caught up onto them and realized that it wasn't really safe to practice that form of druidism, and that turning into a Vorgan was really hard to control, and you can risk losing your mind or doing something you wouldn't want to do. So he actually banned it, and later on they were in a war with the Satyr, and one of them didn't use his form in order to like respect Malfurion's thing that he banned it, and he didn't use the form and he didn't defend himself and he died, which pissed off the rest of the druids. And later on, the druids of the site was formed, and they didn't just turn into Vorgan, they actually managed to tame the beast, if you could say that, and become the Vorgan themselves, which completely drew them insane. They lost their minds and all that stuff. They actually attacked Malfurion, but they failed and were banished into the Emerald Dream. However, that definitely wasn't the end of the Vorgan. Now, thousands of years later, the Gilnean nation was going strong and was becoming really industrialized and stronger in economy, and was really becoming a big nation. And then the orcs attacked. They kinda helped in the first war, But in the Second War, Lordaeron begged them for help, but they didn't want to do it, as they thought that the rest of the humans would try to abuse their wealth. And after the First War, Jen Greymaint ordered his men to build this giant wall, which completely isolated them from the entire world, and they started living in their entire own universe. They had their own villages, towns, farms, factories, and all of that was needed in order to sustain an actual kingdom. Now, it was working out for them quite well for around 20 years, I mean they pretty much had everything, until the Scourge started bunching up in front of their walls. Now, Arugal, who was a very powerful mage, with the permission of Jen Greymaint, because the situation was so dire, and he had to actually summon the ancient Worgen from the Emberdon Dream. He actually managed to do it due to the help of a tree, but I really can't go into detail. And of course, the Worgen fought well and defeated the Scourge, but that definitely wasn't the end. I mean, the Worgen started infecting the citizens of Gilneas, and soon the curse started spreading out like wildfire. The Gilneas citizens started turning into Worgens. Even Jen Greymaint was bitten by a Worgen on one of his hunts, as he organized these secret hunts in order to get rid of the Worgen, but he kind of failed on that, obviously. Also thought it was worth mentioning, before we get into the actual events of the Cataclysm, that the Dead Knights that we have playable today aren't really Gilneas citizens, and are just the Worgen who escaped and were captured by the Scourge, even though they were immune to the plague of undead. Like, when you're a Worgen, you can't get infected by the plague, but they weren't really immune to the rituals of a Dead Knight, so that's why they are the Dead Knights. But anyways, the Cataclysm happened and their walls were shattered, destroyed, and of course the Forsaken on their front doors. They also attacked them navally because they had like these reefs, like a block on the sea, but that was destroyed with the Cataclysm as well, so they attacked them by ships. Well, they also had a civil war going on between Crawley and Jen Greymaint. It was a giant war that kinda like ended afterwards, and Gilneas fell and Gilnean people needed help. So they turned to the Night Elves first, and then later on to Varian Vryn, which, after a lot of talk, accepted them into the Alliance. And when I say a lot of talk, I mean like, he barely accepted them. I mean, they pretty much made a whole book, like 500 pages, called Wolfheart, dedicated to their initiation to the Alliance. I mean, not everything else about the Worgen, but generally the book covers the Worgen, Goldrin, also Garrosh on the other side, but that doesn't really matter too much. Also, what happened in Gilneas as well is that Alchemist that you kind of saved in the introduction questline found a serum for the curse that made them control the form instead of being taken by it. So that is pretty much how today's Worgen work. Now today they're just a part of the Alliance and reside in Alliance cities, so nothing really crazy is going on with them. Now let's get a bit into their culture and traditions as well. Now Gilneas is a very, very nationalistic country, and they think that Gilneas is like the best nation in the world. That everything that comes out of Gilneas is the best, the Gilnean army is the best and all that. And that is actually mostly because they have been isolated for over 20 years and lived by themselves without any contact with other cultures. And especially if some young Gilneans, for example, were babies or were born inside Gilneas, meaning that they probably never even seen the outside world until recently. So they were raised to think good about Gilneas. And I know even in the real world, I mean, you have citizens that are nationalistic and that are not. But most of the Gilneans actually are, if not all of them, maybe with a few exceptions, because that was kind of their only home and they didn't really have anywhere else to go, so they kind of had to believe in Gilneas and build it into what it was. Now, if you couldn't tell from their insane British accents or this amazing, like, stylized architecture and all that stuff, their culture was actually based on the 19th century England, and they also seem to be this aristocrat stereotype, meaning that they appear very cultured. They put a lot of value into paintings, jewelry, they also have like these social ladders and all that stuff. Even though there are other parts of the society as well, I mean, since they had to rely on themselves, they built an entire working society that required really no outside help. So they had their own farmers, factory workers, tailors, bakers, miners, soldiers, guards, and all that stuff. So if you plan on getting a detailed backstory for your character, I would suggest picking one of these professions that you like did in the past, because you couldn't just do nothing in the Gilneas, as every citizen was valuable for the isolated nation. Now let's discuss the curse for a bit. So now that you know that the Worgens aren't actually Worgens, and that they actually just have the ability to turn into them, or the so-called curse, you have to understand that not all of the Worgens feel the same about it, and that you can control it in many ways. Now, generally speaking, the curse is a bad thing, but it can also be a good thing depending on your own personality that you pick. So I will cover this part in more detail in the personalities types, like in the second part of the video. but I just want to give you a few choices you can pick. So pretty much you have two forms, and you can decide on how the other wild form will affect you, and you can either fully control it or be kind of split about it or even uncontrollable, although don't really go too crazy about it. I mean, it's your choice, you probably want to decide how you want to handle the curse, but as I said, I will cover it all in detail in the second part of the video, pretty much before the end. Alright, now on how to talk like a Worgen. Now, unlike some other races, there isn't really anything like that special about their speech, apart from their like strong accents, but they generally speak the same language as the humans, without any like crazy words or apostrophes or pauses or whatever it is, like the dwarves or the trolls and all that stuff. So just feel free to type as you would in English, and of course if you're British it might even feel a bit more natural. And lastly, before we get into personalities and classes, let's discuss a bit on how you should actually name your character. Now, even though a lot of people think that like if you're a Worgen, you should be called something like Feralheart, Grimjaw, like Claws or whatever it is, but you do have to actually keep in mind that this curse is recent, and before that they were just regular humans, just like any other humans. So, your Worgen probably should have a human name. Now, Jen Greymane is a really convenient coincidence, I guess. I mean, it's obviously like made by Blizzard just for the Worgen curse and all of that. But it's mostly because of his last name, but I don't think you should do that. Like, think of something that is Worgen sounding, but also humanish as well, as it can be quite corny. But you can like pull it off if you want. So generally I would look at the Worgen NPCs and base my name around them, or just generally look up wow human names or even just common British names, as it is quite similar and it can work pretty well for your character. Now let's get a bit into the personalities you can pick. Now I will only give you a few drastic examples which you can base your character off, like guidelines, so feel free to do whatever you want to do with these, as these are just sort of examples, sort of like a starting point. And as I mentioned earlier in the video, personalities are mostly based on the curse and how the Worgen are actually handling that curse. So the first personality would be the peaceful, controlled one. So if you're playing something like this, it means that you can control the Worgen curse quite well and you don't completely like lose your mind when you acquire the form, meaning that there won't be like any drastic changes between your Worgen and your human form. So your personality should be kind of based on your human form, or however you choose it to be. Now, if you're playing this type of Worgen, you might be kind of calm or peaceful and understanding and all that stuff. However, you can really pick any sort of human traits. You don't really have to be peaceful if you don't want to. Now, second, it would be the split personality. Now, this one is a bit different, but can be really, really interesting if done right. You can really pull something off with it. This means that your Worgen is sort of like struggling with the curse, and he has like two different personalities, one for the Worgen and one for his human form. You can also talk to the other personalities, all that stuff, maybe like in third person. However, really be careful when doing this, because it's not really that easy to pull off. I would say it's quite difficult, and you can be really like corny about it if you don't do it in the right way. And the last personality I'm going to mention is the aggressive one. Now, this is really just a straightforward personality, and it isn't really too hard to pull off, I guess. I mean, it means that you're either aggressive by nature, or that you're aggressive in your Worgen form. However, don't try to do the opposite, as you were like peaceful in your Worgen form but aggressive as a human, as it doesn't really work in that way. You can also go about it in two ways, like either being aggressive before the curse, like by nature, or just having your personality affected by the curse. So these are just sort of, as I would call them, cookie cutter personalities that you can choose and build from, and they aren't even really just personalities. I mean, it's mostly just how you can choose to handle the curse, while your general nature should be the same around as you would design it for a human. However, do keep in mind that lore and culture I mentioned previously in the video, so kinda try to base it around that. And lastly, let's get into some of the classes that you can pick. Like, some of them are working in-game, some of the subclasses you can choose to roleplay as. So, as always, first would be the warrior class. Now, the warrior is generally just an enhanced, like a regular warrior, nothing really special about it. I mean, a lot of Gilneans were warriors, and now with the curse they got, they also have all these buffs like agility, strength, quickness and all that stuff, so they're even more effective, and it would be really good to start out this class. It isn't really too hard to do, and generally you can pick a few subclasses. You can either be one of the Crowley's men, or part of the Greymane's Loyal Guard. You can also be a mercenary. So you kind of have your hands open, it's kind of the same as with all other warriors. Now, next would be the Hunter. Now, Hunter is really interesting class to pick when playing a Worgen, since they have like these awesome Mastiff pets, and it suits your culture as well. I mean, generally, they aren't like born hunters or like nature people like the Tauren or the Orcs, for example, but they like to hunt and can be quite good at it. And generally, since a lot of them are aristocrats, they could probably hunt on like the weekends, just like Jen Greyman used to do, like from sport. But since they're working now, they kind of like hunting more, a lot more, and they also like to chase their prey. And yeah, it's a bit more natural once you're working. So if you pick this class, you can go about it in a few ways. You can either be like a Houndmaster, or just a Rifleman, or just generally just a regular Hunter. And the next class would be the Rogue. Now, this can work quite well, and I don't know why, but for some reason, this one looks really good to me, kind of like appeals to me, since they have like this sort of like dark architecture, and sort of like a gritty style with rain and all that stuff, like dark alleyways. So it's like a perfect place to pick like a pickpocketer or an assassin and all that stuff. So generally, the Gilneans are very rich and wealthy, but I mean, when there is a lot of wealth, there is also a lot of poor people, so that means that some of the Gilneans had to become thieves in order to survive. And also, they can be quite efficient as assassins as well, since they have this new curse and all of the newfound skills. Now, let's go over the druids. Now, Gilnean druids are very different, actually, from the other druids, or at least they used to be. I mean, even before the actual curse, they used to practice this weird style of druidism they like to call the old ways, which generally isn't anything advanced, and it's sort of just like basic druidism. They can grow some of the nature, like the crops. They can also control the weather a bit and all that, which is perfect when they were isolated, as they can build their own like farms and all that stuff. But after they came out of the desolation, they also met the Night Elves, who taught them the true ways of druidism and all the advanced stuff. So if you want to be a druid, this would kind of be the best way to go about it. And lastly, I'm going to cover the warlocks. Now, generally, the Gilneans aren't really warlocks, but there were a few of them, and even though it was kind of shunned upon, and even though it wasn't really allowed to practice such like dark magics, a lot of these warlocks were accepted as they were invaded from all sides and were facing many threats, so any help that was available was valuable to the Gilneans. So warlocks were definitely helpful because they're, I believe, considered to be the most powerful casters in the game, and the demonic magics they practice are quite efficient. Now, I don't really see any specific like subclasses you can pick as a warlock, but generally Gilnean warlocks are very few in numbers and weren't really such a widespread thing as you might have thought. Now, I know there is a few other classes that I haven't covered, since I don't really have the time in this video, I don't want to make it like an hour video, but you can also have the priests, who work well since they always kind of practice the ways of the light, plus even the shadow now as well. Also, you have the mages, who aren't really anything special, as a lot of humans can practice such magics. And lastly, there are the Death Knights, that I don't really want to cover in this video, as it is a really, really wide and a confusing topic. And it will probably be either a separate video, just on the Gilneans, or once I finish all the races, I'll probably cover the Death Knights, like sort of a Death Knight RP guide, and then I will go by each race. And obviously, Worgen will take like the biggest part of the video. And that is all I have for this guide. I hope you had enjoyed, or at least I hope it helped you out a bit with setting up your character. Leave some feedback on what race you would like to see covered next in the RP Guide series. Also, thanks a lot for taking your time to watch this video, and don't forget to like, favorite, and subscribe, as it really helps out the channel and really keeps these videos going. And also, you can check out my Twitch stream in the channel description, as I kinda stream a few times a week now. And thanks so much for watching, and see you next time.
It seems your people have lost their leader after all.
And perhaps your people will lose theirs. You better fear me. You think us allies? Once this is done, I'll kill you too.
You will die in agony, just like your son.
I still hope that the Dark Lady gets her revenge at Gen Greymane sometime soon. Not sure about next expansion, but hopefully soon. We just heard Nan with her song Vorgen. And up next we have Hazelnutty Games with her pet battle guide and family fighter strategy for the Marcus battle pet on Argus, the legendary pet that you have to defeat for the family fighter achievement. I still haven't started it yet myself, but given that I watched this YouTube video of hers, I got the itch to start doing it. So without further ado, here's Hazel.
Hi, I'm Hazel, and this is your guide to the Marcus pet battle on Argus. I'm going to start with a quick strat to beat him for your world quest, and then run through strategies for every single pet family for progress on the Family Fighter achievement. Marcus lives here on Macaree. I'm probably saying his name wrong, and that's okay, because he's an NPC and he doesn't have feelings. First up, the fast lineup for doing your world quest. This will also double as the flying strat. My first pet is a docile Skyfin with Slicing Wind, Wild Magic, and Predatory Strike. Second is Icky with Black Claw and Flock, and third, I've got a Pterodax Hatchling with Slicing Wind. Starting with the Skyfin, throw down a Wild Magic and heal pull in your Icky. Use Black Claw, and then Flock. After Icky dies, the Pterodax Hatchling comes out and we'll use Slicing Wind. If that doesn't kill him, we've still got that Predatory Strike waiting in the wings with our Skyfin. Next up, Aquatic. My first slot is a Spawn of Gnathus with Swallow You Whole and Thunderbolt. Second is an Emperor Crab or Magical Crawdad with Surge and Whirlpool. And third is a Gulp Froglet with Swarm. Start with the eel, pass, and he brings in the crab. Use Surge, then Whirlpool, then Surge. The Surge animation is still a little buggy, but it'll go off eventually. The Gulp Froglet comes back and we'll use Swarm. After a bit of that, Spawn of Gnathus comes back. Use Thunderbolt, then Swallow You Whole. Consider him swallowed. It's critter time. I'm using three rabbits, each one with 357 speed, and set up with Flurry, Dodge, and Stampede. Start with Dodge, then Stampede. He's going to absolutely wreck you with that first pounce, and that's fine. On the second rabbit, use Dodge, then Flurry, then Stampede. When he swaps in your third rabbit, start with Flurry, and then Dodge, then Stampede. On our final sliver of a bunny, use Dodge, and then Flurry twice to win. Next, Elemental. My first pet is a Frigid Frostling or any Elemental pet with Surge, using Surge. Second is a Tiny Twister with Wild Winds, Bash, and Call Lightning, and third is a Crazy Carrot with Ironbark and Blistering Cold. Your Tiny Twister must have more health than your Carrot. Starting with my Frostling, I'll use Surge, and then he pulls in my Twister. Use Call Lightning, then Bash, then Wild Winds before he ports in your Carrot. Go Blistering Cold, then Ironbark, then pass, and he brings back the Twister. Same thing, Call Lightning, Bash, Wild Winds. At this point, he brings back the Frostling, but all he has to do is witness. We're done. Next is Humanoid. My first slot is Squirky with Stampede and Bubble. Second, I'm using an Ash Leaf Sprightling with Poisoned Branch, Wild Magic, and Entangling Roots. Third is a Thistle Leaf Adventurer with Bite and Dazzling Dance. Start with Squirky, pass, and he brings in the Adventurer. Use Dazzling Dance, then Bite twice. He brings in the Sprightling. Use Wild Magic, then Poisoned Branch, then Entangling Roots. Void Portal brings in Squirky, who goes for Stampede. I guess I didn't need Bubble. Next, we'll do Mechanical. My first slot is a Pocket Cannon, but this could really be a whatever, it doesn't do anything. Second is a Draenei Micro Defender with Reflective Shield and Ion Cannon, and third is the Cogblade Raptor, preferably with less health than the Micro Defender. If it's an even 1400, you might have the wrong pet Void Portaled in. Start with the cannon, pass, and he brings in the Micro Defender. Use Reflective Shield, then Ion Cannon. That does some work, and the Cogblade Raptor comes in. Use Overtune, and then batter twice. That's it. Next is Beast, and this one's a classic. The first slot is a Cheetah Cub with Screech, followed by the Zandalari Ankle Render and Indeed Biter with Black Claw and Hunting Party. Start with the Cheetah and use Screech. A Zandalari comes in and will Black Claw, then Hunting Party. Void Portal brings in the third pet, and one more Hunting Party sorts it out. If you only have one Zandalari Raptor, you could use almost any beast in the third slot as long as it has a damage move and less health than your Raptor. Next, we'll do Dragonkin. My first slot is a Life Exchange Dragon with Life Exchange, which today is a Nether Fairy Dragon. Second is Chrominius with Howl and Surge of Power, and third is the Stormborn Whelpling with Call Lightning and Thunderbolt. I'll start with the Fairy Dragon, pass the turn, and he pulls in Chrominius. Swap back to the Fairy Dragon and use Life Exchange. Pass the turn, and he brings Chrominius back. Use Howl, then Surge of Power. Void Portal brings in the Stormborn Whelp, and we'll use Call Lightning, and then Thunderbolt. Up next is Magic. My first pet is a Sapphire Cub with Pounce and Screech. Second is an Extinguished Eye or any Eye pet with more health than your Netherspace Abyssal using Psychic Blast, Eye Blast, and Interrupting Gaze. Third, the aforementioned Netherspace Abyssal with Immolate, Explode, and Meteor Strike. Start with the Blue Kitty and use Screech, and then he pulls in your Eye. Use Interrupting Gaze, then Psychic Blast, then Eye Blast. Void Portal brings in your Abyssal. Use Immolate, then Meteor Strike. After that animation figures itself out, he Void Portals back your Eye pet. Another Interrupting Gaze, then Eye Blast, then Psychic Blast. The Sapphire Cub swings back in and will Pounce, then Screech. Kitty dies and will bring out the Netherspace Abyssal and end the fight with Explode. Last, we have Undead. My first slot is a Ghastly Kid with Diseased Bite, Ethereal, and Haunt. Second is Blight Breath with Toxic Smoke, and third is a Blighted Squirrel with Stampede. You could use that other squirrel or the marionette in that third slot as long as it has less health than Blight Breath. Start with the goat and use Ethereal, then Diseased Bite, then Haunt. Bring in Blight Breath and use Toxic Smoke, then he Void Portals in the squirrel. Use Stampede, and that'll continue for a few rounds until he portals back in your Blight Breath. Toxic Smoke just once and he's Toxic Toast. So, that's Family Fighter Marcus. If it hadn't been for Family Fighter, I'm not sure I even would have found this guy. Thank you so much for watching! Subscribe for the rest of the Family Fighter guides and other super cool WoW videos, let me know what you think, share your own strategies in the comments if you like, and have a wonderful, wonderful day! Bye!
Ludra the Mage here.
And I'm Ben the Mage. Ludra, 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 did you know that dogs and beasts can smell fear and that the human head weighs 8 pounds and my cat's breath smells like cat food?
Yes, Ben, I saw that movie too. Why are you so hyper?
I'm not hyper. I mean, all I know is that I just hang around with you and it's like all of a sudden I go like warp speed and I have so much energy and I can just run and 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 run.
While Ben is trying to expend all of his excess energy.
I saw a butterfly.
Go chase it. Make sure to check out Battle Pets episode 118, Contact Sugar High, where we talk about boss battles, pets, spotlight, and all the spooky goings on with Hollow's End.
Oh my gosh, Hollow's End is my favorite time of the year. There's candy and pets and candy and Hood the Sourceman and candy.
I think we've solved the mystery of what's gotten into Ben.
I haven't had any yet. I gotta get that mini floating necropolis first.
The truth is out there.
Like a rogue, I bite and I swipe to feed you slow. You've nowhere to go. You'll be my 100th killing blow. Cause we are designed to PvP like you're my prey. So don't try to hide from me, cause you'll never get away. Just cause I mostly play cat form only. Feral druid cat form prowling now. I play as cat only. No, I'm not furry. Druid kitty meow 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 meow. Meow meow meow. Druid kitty meow 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 meow. Meow meow meow. Feral druid cat form prowling now. With tiger's fury I deal more damage and save energy. You can't get a break, hey. My thoughts kill you as you try to run away. Cause we are designed to PvP like you're my prey. So don't try to hide from me, cause you'll never get away. cause I mostly play cat form only. Feral druid cat form prowling now. I play as cat only. No, I'm not furry. Druid kitty meow 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 meow.
So you get stunned in front of me, Cyclone. PvP, I cower when I wanna flee. I'm raking and I'm ripping all these allies up and watch them bleed. I'm fighting for these horde in a battleground of blood. Don't you try to pull me, stupid, you'll be face down in the mud. I know that you fear the sight of me. I guarantee you'll turn and leave and you'll receive no mercy, no chance for reprieve.
Don't yeah. mean I'm furry, just cause I mostly play cat form only. Feral druid cat form prowling now. I play as cat only. No, I'm not furry. Druid kitty meow 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 meow. Druid kitty meow 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 meow. Feral druid cat form prowling now.
This was Ember Assaulty featuring Crycodo with Meow. Great song, really. It's like catchy. Now, the next one I have here on my list is a production from Slightly Impressive, but I'm really not sure what to make of it because, in all honesty, it's called How Sylvanas Really Became Warchief. But we all know how that went. We've seen it in the in-game cinematic, so I'm really curious as to see what that is. And given the fact that Slightly Impressive also always has some strange twist on their stories, I'm fearful for what this is going to be, but let's see. Here's Slightly Impressive.
Great spirits of the earth, I fear that I am not long for this world.
Yeah, no, you're totally screwed, man.
Tell me, wise spirit, who should I choose to replace me as war chief?
Oh, is that how it works? Well, let's have you hallucinate a debate to help you decide.
Sure, okay.
Thank you all for coming to the first ever electoral debate of the Horde. Tonight, we are joined by Sylvanas Windrunner, Banshee Queen and Dark Lady of the Forsaken, and Bane Bloodhoof, son of that guy Garrosh killed between expansions. The other faction leaders will not be participating because we couldn't remember who they were. Now then, let's jump right to the first question. How do you plan to address the new threat of the Legion invasion while also dealing with ongoing hostile relations with the Alliance?
The Forsaken will annihilate all who oppose us, without mercy. Death to the Legion, and death to the living! I mean the Alliance, not the living. I love the living. Some of my best friends are alive.
So, we're just gonna keep going after that? She's still in the running? Okay. Well, my father was a strong proponent of peace, and I shall be no different. We should work together with the Alliance to defend our shared homeland from these demonic invaders.
Oh, please. Lady Windrunner. Many members of the Horde have serious reservations about the questionable actions of the Forsaken, such as the massacre at the Wrathgate, the invasions of Gilneas, and the resurrection of dead Alliance members as Forsaken. What do you have to say to those people?
We never did any of that. It's all lies.
What? Those things all happen in cinematics and quest events. Everyone knows they—
Wrong.
Lady Windrunner, these are well-documented facts. Are you saying you refuse to take responsibility for your own actions as leader of the Forsaken?
Did you know the Legion kills people with fell magic?
That's not what I asked you about.
They burn people alive with green fire. Do you think the Tauren can save you from fell magic? While they're sitting around hugging their night elf friends, the Legion is going to burn everything and possibly turn it green.
Chieftain, how do you respond?
Look, we have to get very, very tough on the fell. I have a nephew. He's 10 years old. He has magic. He is so good with magic, it's unbelievable. The fell is very, very tough.
Are you saying your nephew will save us from the Legion's fell magic?
You guys know Sylvanas is a zombie, right?
No, you're the zombie.
That doesn't make any sense.
Wrong.
Stop saying that.
Okay, so how was that terrible nightmare supposed to help me decide who should be war chief?
Oh, I don't know. It was fun though, right?
No, it was awful and really embarrassing. Anyway, tell me who to pick. I'm going to be dying any second now.
Oh, right. Let's go with Sylvanas.
Really? Why?
It makes for a better story. Maybe she can be our raid boss later.
Oh, what?
Oh, nothing. Anyway, got lots of important spirit stuff to do. Enjoy the afterlife.
Okay then. Bye.
Did you know debate moderators almost never wear shoes? It's weird, right?
For all the times that you said I was lame, and all the raids I got in using your name. You think you're still my friend, don't know what a mistake. You think I'm getting carried now, well I ain't. And we didn't want to kick you out, cause we didn't want everyone raiding. Have to stop, we're good, but this is where we end up. And baby, better pack your stuff. You must think you're really something. We don't wanna keep you. I'll send you on now through. My guildies don't like you, and we like everyone. But we really got sick of you saying we're wrong. And we were so blinded by the loot and the cool achievements too. But now we know we're better playing on our own. Cause if you think our level means so much, oh baby, you should go and raid yourself. And if arena rating's all you want, then honey, you can PvP yourself. And when you told us that you hate how we play, you complained until we did it your way. And every time you told me my enchantments were wrong, it just reminded me that you should be gone. And we didn't want to kick you out, cause we didn't want everyone raiding. Have to stop, we don't, but this is where we end up. And baby, better pack your stuff. You must think you're really something. We don't wanna keep you. I'll send you on now through. My guildies don't like you. We just wanna have fun. But we really got sick of you saying we're wrong. And we were so blinded by the loot and the cool achievements too. But now you go, cause we're better playing on our own. Cause if you think our level means so much, oh baby, you should go and raid yourself. And if arena rating's all you want, then honey, you can PvP yourself. There was a time I'd see your name log in green. You used to help, but now you just make a scene. And sure, your deeps were big, but we're gonna say bye. We'll miss the wins, it's just the price was too high. Cause if you think our level means so much, oh baby, you should go and raid yourself. And if arena rating's all you want, then honey, you can PvP yourself. Cause if you think our level means so much, oh baby, you should go and raid yourself. And if arena ring tings all you want, then honey, you can go and cure yourself.
That was Silver Latomi with her song Play Yourself. Next up, I dug out one of my old segments where I go over the zone of Silithus. That zone has become relevant again, so to speak, with the upcoming patch 7.3.2, where we go there after we are done on Argus and we're done with the raid there. I don't want to spoil anything, but I've been told that there is a NPC that is going to be able to rewind time, Zorodormi, much like she does in Blasted Lands, but still having the story focusing on Silithus. I think for the people that aren't too familiar with the story of Silithus, it's quite worth going there. The quest chain is only, I think, 18 plus quests long. You have these three or four that make up the buffer number, so I would say a max of 25 quests in the zone. They're well worth doing and digging into the zone a little. Here is my segment about Silithus. Enjoy. Hello everyone. Today I want to talk about probably the zone that has been affected by the Cataclysm least, if at all, and that zone is Silithus. Silithus has always held a special place in my heart for quite a few different reasons. One being that I myself, as a lore nerd, really like the story of the War of the Shifting Sands. So basically what that is the conflict between the Akiri and the Night Elves, which led to a pretty much all-out war involving some of the dragon flights as well. And then in the end, after the Night Elves were victorious, they put up the Scarab Wall around Ankh-Morai and sealed it with a spell and broke up the scepter that was used to cast that spell into three pieces. And to put the scepter back together was the purpose of the big world event we had back in vanilla days in 1.12 to unlock the gates of Ankh-Morai, which in my opinion still was the greatest server-wide rallying cry event that we ever had. And it's probably never going to be surpassed because the sheer size of it would result in another server crash like they had back in the day. So let's just go over the fundamental details of the zone real quick. There's not much to tell. As I said in the beginning, Silithus is a zone that has probably been affected least by the Cataclysm. So there isn't any difference except the map that it got updated after Cataclysm release with a little more detailed picture of the Ankh-Morai, the Fallen Kingdom area. Some things I really like about it, the zone that is that it's part of two legendary quest lines. For one, the opening of the gates, as I said earlier, and the other one takes place partly in the Crystal Vale in the northwestern part of the zone, where you need to go if you want to complete the quest for Thunder Fury, Blessed Blade of the Windseeker, and you have to go there multiple times, but that's another thing. We have to take into account that there are quite a few different factions running around in this zone. We have the Twilight Cult, we have the Ankh-Morai, or the Karaji faction with all the Silithid bugs, and we have the Cenarian Circle that is based in Cenarian Hold, the only flight point is based there in the entire zone. I think it's the one zone that only has one flight point in the entire game. At least there are not that many, I would say, if any other. Lastly, we have, if you want to read about the War of the Shifting Sands, which I highly suggest if you are into early Azeroth lore, and with early I mean about 3,000 years ago, we have the Southwind Village that is part of the story. It's Bones of Gracherond, which is a huge blue dragon, or the remains thereof. Those are the most predominant areas where you can go and check out the consequences of the War of the Shifting Sands, together with, of course, the Gates of Ankh-Morai, with the gong that you had to hit to open the gates. Another faction we have in this zone is the Bronze Dragonflight. It's not the name of the faction. The name of the faction is Brood of Nostormu, but that's literally the Bronze Dragonflight, so there you go. That's the leveling faction that you work on if you do the 40-man raid in Ankh-Morai. The smaller raid, the 20-man, rewards Rep with the Cenarian Circle. And I think a little bit of the Brood of Nostormu, but I'm not sure how much and what conditions need to be met. There are quite a few transmog items you can get in those two raids, and there are only raids in this zone. There aren't any five-men connected to it, so basically you'll have to go other places to find related aspects of the lore. This should be it for me for today. There isn't really much else. I was wondering if I should do a segment on the War of the Shifting Sands, but in light of the length of this segment as it is, I will refrain from it. If you people are interested in me going into it, please let me know. Tweet me at GrandNagus1, write me an email at towerofcommerce@gmail.com. This has been Grand Nagus, Rule of Acquisition number 19. Satisfaction is not guaranteed. Bye guys.
Power up, power, power up, up, power, power, power up, artifacts. Power, power up, power, power up, artifacts. Artifacts and power, power up, up, power.
We got a new grind weapon that's all mine, but it makes me sour, cause I got no power. I go out questing in class hall, investing, grinding every hour to collect that power. What the hell just happened? I'm so mad with them. After a few upgrades, I need over 9,000.
Ding, ding. Let's power up our artifacts.
Power up, power, power up artifacts.
Ding, ding. Let's power up our artifacts.
Power, power up, up, power. I got a six staff, even chilling attack. I'm a goblin scour, need to find more power. I do my world quest, heart beating through my chest. Weapon must devour, cause it still needs power. What the hell just happened? I'm so mad with this. After a few upgrades, need over 20,000.
Ding, ding. Let's power up our artifacts.
Power up, power, power up artifacts.
Ding, ding. Let's power up our artifacts.
And power, power up, up, power.
Ding, ding, ding. Artifacts.
Ding, ding. Let's power up our artifacts.
Up, power, power up artifacts.
Ding, ding. Let's power up our artifacts.
Power, power up, up, power.
Ding, ding.
Power, power up, power, power up artifacts.
Ding, ding.
Artifacts and power, power up, up, ding, ding.
That was a collaboration between Rowan of Moonguard and Kavo 350 called Artifact Power. And we know we can't ever have enough artifact power.
Time flies like an arrow.
Flesh flies like carrion.
And this brings us to the end of episode 29 of Corpse Run Radio. I hope you have enjoyed your time with us today, and I want to thank today's contributors: Noble 87, Charm, Doron's Movies, Nan the Mistweaver, Hazel Nutty Games, Ember Salty, Crycoda, Slightly Impressive, Silver Latomi, Rowan of Moonguard, Cavo350, and the song that is going to end the show for today is by Timmy Dangerously featuring Tamalala, and it is called Playing Around. Have a great week. Until then, bye guys.
I like crafting lots of things, high-heeled boots and epic rings. I feel stuff in just one swing when playing around with you.
Like mouse that ain't too slow, and finding books along the road, mini games and cheer emotes.
Cheer emotes?
Playing around with you.
Playing around. Getting a quest or two, doing what gamers do whenever they're playing around.
I like lots of gold on hand and dirty jokes we can reach out spam.
I hate when I rubber band when playing around with you.
What? You know, I like the thrill when we kill things.
Boss fights that don't ever change.
And laughter when we're emoting.
I'm playing around with you.
Playing around.
With my bow, leveling up nice and slow.
Going places no one knows whenever we're playing around.
Woo! I like the crazy things we buy.
And the spicy things we say online.
Just to watch a daytime turn to night.
And playing around with you.
Playing around with you. Trying to stop that's new. Get the best gear too. Whenever we're playing around.
Playing around.
What are we if not slaves to this torment?